Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag, and we're glad to be back. Been off for a little while. We always say that. It's like every show we do now, we say that.
Well, it's, you know, 1 week is some fire drill or another, or vacation, or, you know, we're not necessarily in sync.
Yeah. How ironic. Yeah, and we had someone write the show who was like, you know, are you going to do another show? We miss it and everything. And we're like, yeah. And I said we should have like a sticky at the top that says why we were off in a given week, because there's always a very good excuse.
Kind of like
still
the,
an excuse.
Sign in the, you know, those mom and pop stores, be back in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Be back in 3 weeks.
out fishing for 3 weeks. All right. So, question from the coffee house. Saw this one in there, and I thought it was kind of interesting. It'd be perfect for you. It says, we have a lot of PDFs that we want to run OCR on them and want these files to be re-indexed by Windows Search. So what causes Windows Search to re-index a file? Change file size? Changed modified file date? I ask this because the OCR program has the option to apply the original date on the newly created OCR'd file. So new files will have this old date and file name, but a different file size. Is that enough for Windows Search to re-index them?
So what you want to do is you can keep the original date and then just change the modified date, and that should be enough for the indexer to do it.
Cool. Okay. I'll wait for you to get your thing back up. There you go. You should set your machine not to go to sleep.
I know.
All right. Next from Leo. I've been trying to upgrade my grandparents' computer from Windows 7 Home Premium. That should get you a medal right there. Work on your grandparents' machine. To Windows 10 Home. Yesterday I left it going and I sat on a black screen with the Windows 10 logo and no progress indicator for 1 hour, 15 minutes before I forced a restart. Once Windows 7 reloaded, I got the error 0xC190001. 0x20017. The installation failed in safe OS phase with an error during boot operation. I've unplugged the external peripherals except for the mouse, keyboard, and screen. I've also disconnected the internal card reader. The only remaining internal devices are USB ports, DVD, SATA hard drive, plus the onboard graphics. Any assistance would be appreciated.
Cool. So a lot of things that you can do with this one. What's interesting, you know, right now, we've actually kind of been off for, you know, a month. Windows 10 upgrades have been progressing, and for the most part, it's actually been going really, really well. Mm-hmm. Now, it is, of course, never perfect. Nothing ever is.
Not with a billion machines.
Not with a billion machines, exactly. So sometimes it can be difficult upgrading from very old systems, especially Win 7. Depending on how old they are, like did they actually come from Vista, for example, or did you purchase it with Win 7 on it? And not all machines are created equal. But you know, there are some relatively basic steps that you can try, but one of the biggest things that I'd ask everybody to do is, first of all, I want to know about your upgrade problems.
You know,
really, I do want to know about them because we want to make this better for everybody. But when you're making changes, it's kind of like the old axiom, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Mm-hmm. The thing about software testing, or testing in general, is that we're never really doing the exact same thing over and over again. However, what we really want is for you to only make one change and then do the test to see if that's actually the critical change. So in general, I looked at the Panther logs that came from this particular machine. And I wanted to set a few steps in order that I'd like you to try. And this is basically for everybody that are having upgrade type issues. First of all, upgrade your BIOSes to the latest possible one. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that will actually solve a bunch of issues. You know, so make that one singular change, do the upgrade, see if it fails. Now, I understand that's very time-consuming, very tedious for a lot of these systems. I get it. I feel your pain. However, you guys are also more adept, hopefully a little bit more willing to incur some of this pain so that
Grandpa's
the vast...
not going to update his BIOS.
No,
I
but it looks like he's got a friend that will actually do it for him and will live through that kind of pain.
Yeah.
I get it. I know. I feel the pain. I've done this on hundreds of systems, and yes, time-consuming, painful. I get it. But once we actually find the issue, you get that information to me, then I can actually do something about it and more people won't actually have to hit that particular problem.
Yeah. For me, sometimes when I look at a firmware page, whether it's BIOS or any other device, you know, when you go there and you see that it's got a date on the firmware mm-hmm. that's very recent, mm-hmm. or it's right when Windows 10 came out or something like that, that's a really good indicator that that's probably firmware that you should be using.
So that is definitely an indirect indicator.
Start
yes.
there. Yep. I mean, if it's firmware and it's got a date that's like 5 years ago, you know.
Still update, but
it's probably not critical.
Exactly.
But, you know, for the things that are more recent, that's a good place to start.
Right. And so, as I was saying, I was looking at the Panther locks for this particular machine, and I wanted to actually go over the software that you should uninstall. First of all of the ATI and AMD software that mm-hmm. you've got installed. Looks like it has a pretty old video card in it. Because of the error, you're failing to boot into WinPE mode. That's kind of the error code.
Yeah.
Video drivers are potentially a good indicator. The next one would be that if it can't properly boot, it's possibly a filter driver, so uninstall everything Nero.
Yeah.
And once you get those two off, you know, you've done the upgrade. If that still doesn't do it, you have some other ones. The Asus VGA driver, PC Wizard, which has been known to cause some problems, Spyware Blaster, Virtual Clone Drive, SpyBot, Search and Destroy, this ASR app charger, it comes with the ASRock motherboard, mm-hmm. And CC Cleaner. And this other one called Instant Boot. This one might actually want to go more towards the front. If you're having problems booting, Lord only knows what that thing is doing.
So any grandparent apps, get rid of those.
Grandparent apps.
Things that grandparents would have on their machines.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know why these.
CC Cleaner.
Yeah, CC Cleaner is, how do I put it mildly?
Don't. Let's just move on.
Good call. And this last one, this Logitech camera driver, I don't honestly suspect it, but if all of these others fail,
yeah,
try that one.
Yeah.
But that one's really kind of reaching, I'm not confident that that one's actually the cause, but I'm far more confident that one of these or many of these are actually the root cause.
Yeah. I recently worked on my dad's machine this week too. Mm-hmm. And it's a good opportunity when you just get on the machine and just start uninstalling things. There's always a lot of things that you can uninstall, and I know he's not going to need 90% of those.
Yeah, OEM machines, you know, machines that you haven't hand built yourself. Mm-hmm. It is certainly interesting the types of things that one finds on there, especially years later.
Yeah.
I will leave it at that and leave the rest to your imagination.
Yeah. It was the first time I'd seen BearShare in a long time. I don't even know how that would get on my dad's machine.
Oh, yeah. BearShare, LimeWire, Kazaa.
Dad.
Oy vey.
What are you doing? All right. Okay, so, and then let us know, Leo, and let us know how that upgrade goes after trying those things, and we'll go from there. From Robbie, I've got a registry key with permission denied, a corruption that occurred after the stored bug in Windows 10. The key is HKKEH.
It's okay, you can skip that.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of point. Basically, the question on that one was, how do I gain access to this registry key? And, you know, we can bring up RegEdit here and go to the key that he is talking about, because, yes, boys and girls, I've memorized it. Okay.
It's amazing. That was exactly the key.
Here we go. This is the key that he's talking about. Tell me if I'm right.
You are right. And what is this key?
So this key is driver information, and he was trying to gain access specifically to this properties key. Mm-hmm. Now, as you notice, this machine, this is pretty much as clean as he can get.
Yeah.
The registry is not corrupted, folks. You don't actually have access to every possible key through RegEdit, even if you're administrator. There are certain keys that are only available from kernel mode. So what you're seeing here is not actually a problem. There are a number of keys like this that you just don't have access to, you should never have access to, and no matter what you do from user mode, you're still not going to get access to it because it's protected at the kernel level. So his particular problem is orthogonal to this particular key. We'd have to dig deeper and figure out why he thinks that he's having problems with this particular key, but suffice it to say, changing the permissions on it is not going to solve it.
Okay. From Toby, if my computer fails the Windows 10 upgrade, what tips do you have? They both roll back to Windows 8.1, so they're working. I thought I could reinstall Windows 8.1 and try again with clean install. I saw one of them bug check in the process, but there doesn't seem to be a dump file after rollback. It's strange that these computers are happy running 100% CPU load for weeks on end. I ran memtest on the Nitrogen one, four loops, and saw no problems. The other has ECC RAM, so you'd think it would catch any small errors.
So the big reason, and that's an interesting question and kind of jumps all over the place. Mm-hmm. He's having problems upgrading to Windows 10. Everything's fine in 8.1. Yay. He's getting a bug check, but no dump file is getting written out. Usually that's because it's a failure in the storage stack. So if we can't properly boot into PE, or if there's a corruption, if he's got some sort of third-party encryption running on that drive, boot into WinPE, or attempt to boot into WinPE, things don't work. You could also have a filter driver that's getting injected into WinPE that is bug checking, but since the storage is not available, we can't run out the dump file. Yes, you could do something as drastic as clean installing 8.1, but that's kind of going a little bit too far, in my humble opinion. Get the Panther logs, and the Panther logs are in this directory. I will write it out here. /\windows.tilbt/sources, if I could spell correctly, Panther. Okay. Hidden directory. If you zip that, send that to me, the whole kit and caboodle after a failed upgrade attempt, we can usually make some sort of headway. Mm-hmm. I can look at the drivers that were installed in your system, see if there's anything that looks interesting, give you some tips on disabling something, and then yay, if you actually find the thing that is causing the problem, comes right back to me, and we can do some sort of update, hopefully, so that other people don't hit the issue.
Cool. All right, from Blake, I'm getting the following error when trying to do this update. Did a search and it looks like others are having the same issue. Security update for Internet Explorer Flash Player for Windows 10 for x64 based systems, KB3087040. Your suggestion was to install a couple of things.
Yeah, so here are the actual updates, the direct download updates that will work. We will stick this in the show notes because I ain't reading this out.
Yeah. All right, and that should help fix the problem.
Yep.
All right. Next question from Philip. I'd like to learn programming and I'm blind. I currently use a screen reader called NVDA. It seems to not be compatible with Microsoft Visual Studio. I've done some research and have some indications that JAWS is compatible with Visual Studio Compiler. Is that true? Are there any programmers out there that write code that are blind? Would you mind telling me how you write, edit, correct errors, and run programs? Can NVDA be used instead of JAWS? So I talked to Daniel Hubble, who is on the Windows accessibility team, and I asked him about this. And he talked to a developer here who's blind. He said, unfortunately, there isn't a short answer. And in my experience, both JAWS and NVDA work partly, but both have issues. And it's a challenge when you're trying to learn a new skill because you're learning both the skill and the accessibility of the environment. He said, to be clear, Narrator, Windows Eyes, and everything else have issues. But the best resource they knows of is the Program Eye email list, where developers who are blind exchange information. And it's freelist.org/list/program-eye. I'll link to it in the show notes. But also, if there's anyone else who's a visually impaired developer, let us know what things you've come across. If there's any tips that you would have for this person, let us know, and we'll try to get those out to him. And, of course, Daniel is always working on making things better. He's a great champion towards accessibility for Windows in all regards. So, you know, he's got that on his list as well.
Yeah, definitely love to see Narrator get better at interfacing with Visual Studio.
I'd like to see Narrator get better for a number of reasons. I mean, just read me my stuff while I'm driving to work and stuff like that. So, yeah. All right, next question from David. I had successfully recovered a recovery drive. I had successfully created a recovery drive for a Windows 10 Pro 64-bit system, including the system files backup on an 8-gig drive. When I tried to do the same thing with the Windows 10 Pro 32-bit system, it failed almost immediately after the create phase started. There's no problem creating a recovery drive without the system files. The event log shows warnings from VSS as follows. Source VSS event ID 8229.
You don't have to read it.
Okay.
It's okay.
Thank you, Gov.
usually the biggest reason for that is a filter driver in the storage stack, again, that is not cooperating with the system. I'd look for what you got running for AV. It has been quite common for those to interfere with the inbox backup tools that interface with VSS. So look for anything along those lines. But a clean system, a 32-bit full system backup should absolutely work.
Okay, good. All right, next question. Hello, is it possible to use my Surface Pro 2 as a live view monitor for my DSLR camera, which is a Canon 5D Mark II? I've searched various forums and no one seems to have the answer. Yes, you can. Actually, on the disc that comes with your Canon, there's this thing called the Canon EOS utility. And if you install that, when you've got a USB cable hooked up to your Canon 5D, plugged into your computer, you run this app and it'll let you see a live preview. The only caveat there is the live preview is kind of jerky because, you know, you've got a USB cable. And so it's not like a very smooth preview, but you can see things and you can also change a lot of the settings like the f-stop and stuff like that. And Golnaz is probably freaking out in there because I bet she's never done that before, or might not have known you could do that, but yes, you can. So it's very cool, and I checked it out last night, and it works pretty well. I like it, so I might even do that myself, but there you go. So you want to get the Canon EOS utility, and when you go search for that on their site, there will be a list of the cameras, so pick your camera and then download the right utility for it, and there you go.
Yeah, it looks like they've updated recently, potentially even for Windows 10.
Yep. All right, next question. My laptop crashed recently and factory image was restored. It now gives me a message to activate Windows again. I had an authentic version of Windows 8.1. How can I get the activation key to activate the Windows?
Call the activation support hotline. They will get you totally squared away.
There you go. All right, next question. Sorry, stupid question time. Does the user have to have a smartphone to use Cortana, or can it be used to simulate a smartphone on a Windows computer?
You don't need a phone to use Cortana on your Windows 10 desktop. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's right here.
There you go.
I have not set up Cortana yet, but let's see. Yay. Here it is. And then you can do this. Peter talks to his computer. He prefers it to typing and particularly prefers it to pen and paper. Hey, Cortana. Hey, Cortana. Search.
That's me.
Okay, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It's like the phone right there. It's the phone experience.
Right.
And so,
Windows IoT. Oh, Windows Yote. Well, Cortana has a little bit of learning to do.
Yeah, keep talking. So, yeah, one of the other things that you can do too is I'll link in the show notes to a page. I'll show you how you set it up. So if you want to always listen, so you can just say, hey, Cortana, at any given time, you can do that as well. All right. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. The first one is Microsoft IoT Starter Kits.
With Adafruit.
Yeah. So we've got this partnership with Adafruit, and so it's got a stripped down version of Windows 10 a starter kit that has a board, Raspberry Pi 2, and you can get started, you can play around with it. Now, one thing that I've heard about this is they went quick. So you might have to get on a list if you want one of these. But yeah, it's out, and you can start playing with it now.
And here's the SDK that you can download from the Windows Dev Center. You can learn all about it. You know, even if you don't get the board right away, you can still run it in a simulator, I believe.
Yeah. So try that out. You'll love it. And the next thing that I wanted to talk about was the Iron Key Workspace W200 Windows to Go thumb drive.
Which I currently have plugged in.
You do. So I got one of these. They sent me one. They're like, hey, try this out. See what you think. And so I got this thing in the mail. And I opened it up. I had this box right here. And it had a, you know, a little security sticker on it to know that it's never been opened before. And I got it in the mail and I looked at it and I was like, I've been watching Mr. Robot, not iRobot. But I've been watching Mr. Robot and I don't feel comfortable opening up this box and sticking this thumb drive in my computer. And so I gave it to Gove. And so he did it.
And I stuck it in. And yeah. The interesting thing is, so these particular Windows to Go drives are special. They're not like your regular old flash drives.
So let me talk about that a little bit. In the past with Windows to Go, and Windows to Go, just so you know, it's a way to run Windows from a thumb drive. And so you plug this thing, you boot off of it, and you've got a Windows PC. Now, in the past, there's only been a couple of thumb drives that supported doing this, so you had to get one of these. This is one of them, and it's huge. It's ridiculous. It's something much bigger than what I would want to carry in my pocket.
It's like double the thickness.
It's basically twice what you would think a thumb drive should be. And so, you know, this is pretty old. This was, you know, Windows 8. And I think that was right when Windows 8 shipped is when I got that thumb drive. And so this is a new version. I really like this. It's like normal USB thumb drive size. I mean, there's it's 32 gigs, so it's like having a 32 gig machine, you know, scaled down. There's still some space on there for things. BitLockered 256-bit AES encryption, so that's nice. I think it's a great use case if you use different machines all the time. So if you're a student or you go use like a school computer or a library machine, but you want to have your own machine that you carry from place to place, I mean, it's perfect for that.
What I like about Windows to Go is that if you're running the Pro SKU of Windows, you can take one of these drives and create a Windows to Go of your current system. So it's essentially, to me, a perfect backup.
Yeah.
So, you know, if something happens with your system, say a drive crashes or whatever, you plug this back in and you're up and going immediately. Mm-hmm. And everything is identical because you're still logging in as your user. All of your settings is a perfect clone, essentially, of your system.
Yeah.
And if you're, if you do that, you basically can take that anywhere. You can make that your primary system if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as a student, as a road warrior, having that as a backup to me is essential.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with these particular drives is that they're not like regular flash drives. When you plug it in, it won't automatically mount. It actually shows up completely differently, completely differently, but differently enough. It shows up as a non-removable drive. Normally, flash drives, you plug it in, it shows up as removable. But this one won't, and it won't even show up in Explorer as a drive. Like, that's not it. If you plug this in, what you have to do is right-click, choose Change Drive Letter and Paths, add a drive letter, and then you'll be able to see it. And it has Windows, let's see what version. Let's see if it's Windows 10. Yep, it's running Windows 10 RTM.
It's definitely Windows 10. So I like this, I mean, I take it with me when I travel, the old thumb drive I used to take with me. And it's nice because if I need to use another machine somewhere, I can use the drive. And it's kind of like having a second computer with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, if my hard drive just completely went south on my laptop, I could always plug this in, and at least I've got a computer that I could use. Now, let me ask you about this. If I have a complete system failure on this laptop here.
Mm-hmm.
Can I use that as like a troubleshooting drive? So I boot off of that and I'm running it and I can look at C and all the, sure. you know, the program directories on here. So I could even use it to like, it's almost like a recovery system to
you
get
could.
Back in and then copy stuff off to this drive.
Normally what happens when you boot off one of these, all of your internal drives will not be automatically mounted.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have to do the exact same thing that I just did to
in
your internal
for, the
for your internal drive to in order to see it and,
yeah.
and to work with it.
Okay, very
yeah,
cool.
Just I don't know if you can really see this or not, but it's like half.
I measured it last night and it is exactly half. Two of the iron keys would be the exact size of the old one. So, and I don't know why they had to be so big, but the old ones for like when Windows to Go came out for Windows 8, there were two different kinds you could get and they were both that size.
Do you want to crack this one open?
I kind of do. So, yeah, so I'm sure there's some kind of circuitry and things in there for, and tell me about the other one.
Basically a larger board.
You were talking about an iron key that had like a combination thing on it?
Oh, yeah, you can get iron keys that, in order to use it, you have to plug in a combination code in order to actually unlock it.
That's very cool. I like that. Okay.
That is very, very cool.
All right.
I don't have one of those yet.
Yeah, so... lots of good use cases if you need a portable system that you can boot off of from using other hardware. If you share a computer in your household, if you're a student and you're always on a different computer in the library or at your school, it would totally be on Fleek. So there you go. All right. So that's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. Leave notes or messages for us in the show notes, and we can get back to you there as well. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.